The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. A little later on, Ali Moreno will be here to talk about Atleti in action in La Liga today. We start off, though, in the Premier League. A Premier League table, of course, that shows that Liverpool at the moment are 10 points adrift of Manchester City at the top of the table after their 4-1 victory against Liverpool at Anfield on Sunday. Jurgen Klopp not happy with a journalist after the game who asked him whether or not the title race was over. He said you need to prepare for your job better and ask better questions. What a waste of a question it was. I am the master of wasting questions. As we welcome in Don Hutchison and Stevie Nicol to the show. Stevie, this isn't the first time, is it? We've seen from Jurgen Klopp the cracks appearing from his happy, friendly personality that we're kind of used to. And I suppose it's a lot easier to be that shining, happy guy when you're winning. When you're losing, it's a lot harder.
Yeah, listen, I've said previously that I think he has opened his mouth too much. He's complained too much. He's moaned too much. But all of those have been when he's had time to think about it and actually rationalise things. Straight after a game, when you're asked a question and you've just lost, I can assure you, you talk about being prickly. I don't personally think there was that much wrong with the question, but I can understand why he got prickly about it. And I'm sure he wanted to get in the guy's face, not just throw a comment at him. So I would suggest that he gets a little bit of leeway here, Dan, because this is straight after a game. And straight after a game, particularly when you're coaching and you're sat on the bench and it's your team, you see things a lot differently for a period of time between the game finishing and maybe 3 or 4 hours later when you've had time to digest everything, think about it, look at stuff. You'll have a more realistic picture of what actually happened. So I do in some ways have a little bit of sympathy on this occasion because it's straight after a game and it's straight after a defeat and a big defeat.
But you admit it, Steve, it's not a stupid question. It's not a niggly trying to get in on your skin. It's do you think you can catch City?
Yeah. It's the timing of it, Dan. It's the timing of the question. It's straight after the game. He probably understands that there's going to be some questions like that, and he doesn't want to answer them, and it makes him feel bad. He's emotional. All of the things that will be going through his head, and some poor character is going to ask the wrong question at the wrong time, and then he's going to get it. But it is straight after a game. So, again, you got to have some sympathy with Klopp. Come on.
Don?
I've got a little bit of sympathy because he is emotional, and that's why we love Jurgen Klopp, good and bad. But I just think he's been like that for a little while, Dan, and I think he's frustrated, and I think he actually can't put his finger on what's actually gone wrong. He's trying to field his strongest side. 3 home defeats on the spins, just not being heard of for a long time. They're losing to all the bottom sides. They can't get wins. They've got no momentum. Just when he thinks he's cracked it, when they win a couple of games in the Capital, they lose then against Brighton, and it was a bad loss. It could have been 2 or 3. And he's probably looking at it thinking, where does this team go? And probably what can I do a bit better rather than just having to go at the pressmen? The pressmen are there to ask a question. Now, I've never stood there in a technical area answering questions after a game. I know I'd be terrible. I know I'd be emotional. But he's a professional manager and he's been in the dugout a long time. He must know these questions are coming. When you're 10 points behind Man City with a game in hand, it's not that ludicrous of a question to ask Jurgen Klopp, are your team done, you know, in terms of winning the league? I didn't think it was that far-fetched of a question.
No, I think in some ways, this situation Liverpool find themselves in, a lot of it is not about coaching. You know, he will be frustrated that he can't actually help his players because there's only so many things he can do. He can sort out the way they play and the personnel and all these things, but he can't go on and play for them. He can't go on and put the ball in the back of the net or make a challenge. And when you've got a bunch of players right now where too many are off form. That is really frustrating for a coach because you're helpless. All you can do is encourage them. With the forwards, you can, you know, you can do drills to get them to hit balls in the net, to give them some confidence. But in this situation where he has particularly the injuries and he has to make decisions that he doesn't want to make as far as personnel, he feels helpless because it's not a coaching thing. It's not.
Don, you sent me through this thing talking about the amount of games that Liverpool players have played since 2018, percentages. Mm-hmm. They've played a lot. We know they're going to play a lot. You're a big team. This is what happens. You have to rely on your stars, and that's just part and parcel of chasing Champions League, of chasing Premier Leagues. And surely you've got to say you've got to manage that better and can't just point to the fact that everybody's tired.
No, that's a good point. I was just letting you know and looked at the facts since 2018. The majority of players, the first team players, have all played in and around 90. Andy Robertson's played 94% of the games. Now, I think Firmino's at 90, Sadio Mane's at 90, Mo Salah's at 94. So I think what it is, it explains why, just in case anyone out there is thinking, well, why are they tired? Is that really a fact? Because loads of players play a million games. But this team's been together now for 3 years. And I think that's why Jurgen Klopp was trying to bring Jota in. He was trying to bring one or two players like Minamino in, just to try and at some point, you know, lessen the amount of games that these guys have been playing. It is what it is. Liverpool have got the success because they've been a good side and they've been a brilliant, probably 12 or 13 players. But what they're not, Dan, is they're not Man City. They're not Man City where they can draft an 18, 19, 20-man squad and make a ridiculous amount of changes because that's the money they've got. Liverpool just haven't got that sort of resources. And when he tries to make a change, I was at the West Ham game commentating on the game, and he played Divock Origi off the left-hand side, and he played Shaqiri as a false nine and Mo Salah on the right, even though they won the game. They were terrible for 45 minutes. And when Origi comes off the bench to try and make an impact, he's a cult hero. The goals that he scored, he'll go down and, you know, he's a legend at the football club, but he's not good enough to start games or have an impact in the majority of games. So I don't know what's going to change. And when Stevie said there, it's not a coaching thing. But you can't just put them in a 4-3-3 every single week and go on, go and play, because you're good enough players, you'll figure it out. I just look at Jurgen Klopp now thinking the players actually need you to maybe do something different, because this, what you're doing right now is not working.
Stevie?
Do you know, I think we've got to be very careful. A couple of weeks ago, I think it was at Sheffield United, beat Manchester United.
Yes, Stephen. Mm. Yep, 2-1.
And the first thing, the first thing we said was, he was disrespectful to Sheffield United because of the team he put out. So we got to watch what we say, because Jurgen Klopp, I'm sure, on many occasions wanted to maybe play some other players, but wants to make sure he wins games. And so this is a fine balancing act between making changes and upsetting the rhythm of the team. You know, it's... We always kind of make things really simple, really clear, when they're actually not. And that's a perfect example. Manchester United don't play a couple of players against Sheffield United, get beat, and all of a sudden everybody's saying, oh, they completely disrespected them. They took this game far too easy. So just be very careful when we're talking about this, because when you're Liverpool, when you're Manchester United or Man City or anybody else, you have to win. And so when you're the coach, at the end of the day, when you're picking a side, you better make sure that this side wins. And that makes it very difficult to start making changes all the time.
I think the difference with that one, though, Stevie, is because Man United had Arsenal a few days later. So I think what Ollie tried to do was rest a lot of his big players.
But it doesn't. The premise is the same, Don. It doesn't matter. The premise is the same, though. You know, we're saying that Klopp hasn't made enough changes, but then Man United go make some changes. They get beat, and then we're all over them, saying they've disrespected the opposition. So it's not simple. It's very, very difficult. I know you get paid a lot of money, but it's not easy.
Stevie, as much as we have applauded Liverpool's recruitment and the players that they've brought in, Don brought up someone who we've discussed a lot, Divock Origi, obviously a hero for Liverpool in the past. You said it was ridiculous to give him a new contract. And it is a little bit ridiculous when you take a look at the big picture of Liverpool Football Club fighting to be one of the best teams in Europe, and their backup striker is him.
On the one hand, yes. On the other hand, you know, a player who wants to play particularly when Liverpool were recruiting, isn't going to go to Liverpool. I mean, seriously, particularly a younger player. Listen, in my opinion, Liverpool should have gone after Cavani. And he's shown just why now for Manchester United. But it's not, again, it's not straightforward. You're either getting an older player, but if you get a younger player, then he's going to, I'm talking 18, 19, a guy who's still got some maturing to do. And that's why Origi fitted the bill, because he scored some goals. He could do it now and again. He could come off the bench and contribute, but he's never going to be a starter. And at least now and again, he could play. That's kind of where it fell for Liverpool with Origi, because who do you get? Who's going to come and join Liverpool when the front three of Firmino, Salah and Mane is about as good as it is in the world? Who's going to join that team and think they're going to get a game? There's not many.
Steve, I don't know how long we've been talking here at the start of the show. Are we overcomplicating everything? If Virgil van Dijk was fit, if Matip was fit, if Gomez was fit, are we in a different world?
I think absolutely. I think Xhaka pretty much was spot on the other day when he said, look, if you take Rodri and you take Gundogan and play them at centre-back, it completely changes everything. Completely changes everything. You know, we're looking at with Fabinho and Henderson playing where they should be playing, completely changes everything that Liverpool do. It changes the way they close the ball. It changes how quickly they get the ball back. And probably as important as anything else, those two in particular, stop anybody from getting anywhere near the back four. As good as it is when everybody's fit, they stop people getting to the back four. That is a simple explanation, and that would make an absolutely gigantic difference. Listen, if Liverpool had 6 more points, we'd be saying they're still in there, they're still at a chance. It's only 4 points, it's only a game and a draw, and the way this season's going. But the truth is, it's not. The fact is, they don't have a central midfield that can do what Klopp wants them to do, and he doesn't have a back line, i.e. centre-backs that can do what he wants them to do. So we shouldn't be surprised when they're losing games.
So it's up to Manchester United then. If you take a look at the table to push at Manchester City, can United do that, Don, with David De Gea in goal?
I don't think they can do it even with David De Gea in goal, Henderson in goal. I don't think they've just got enough. I don't think they've got the belief there yet. I think they're probably just a season behind where they want to be. They're building a fantastic squad. They're getting close. But what they need is a good, strong finish this season and finish second or third and have a good run and then try and convince themselves next season that next season might be the year. I think City are too good. I think they'll probably win the league by 10 points. And it's crazy because I had an argument on here with Craig Burley. It feels like yesterday, but it was probably 2 months ago. And I think Stevie might have been on when Craig was saying Liverpool TV. And I said Liverpool walk the league. Everyone else is playing for second. The drop-off has been incredible. Now, what I would say is, you asked Stevie the question about Van Dijk and Gomez. Van Dijk was in the side that lost 7-2 at Villa. Mm. So I think when you look at Liverpool, the knock-on effect from losing them to centre-halves, the knock-on in midfield, and then the knock-on effect where Trent's playing and Andy Robertson's playing is a lot higher up the pitch. Liverpool last season was so good at going forward, but so... not arrogance, not the right word, but they were confident in Joe Gomez and Van Dijk going 2v2 at the back because no one could beat them for pace or strength. So Liverpool just bombarded everyone, high up the pitch and hammered everyone. But I think United probably are doing well. They're in the race. They can win the league. I don't think they will. But this time next year, if they keep building, I think they might get a lot closer.
I was trying to steer the conversation more about David De Gea, who's taken a lot of criticism over the last 24 hours. Obviously, for the mistake, for the second, people saying that he wasn't brave enough for the third, Don.
Yeah. No, it's right. He wasn't brave enough. He didn't even close Dominic Calvert-Lewin down on the line of the ball. He sort of closed it down on the side where he thought he could make a save. He's not in good form, hasn't been in quite a while. And this problem was always going to come down when Dean Henderson went back to Man United. There was always going to be a problem for Ollie to try and solve. When De Gea makes a bad or a couple of bad errors, what is Ollie going to do? Is he going to put De Gea on the bench and put Dean Henderson in and risk having, you know, a multi-million pound goalkeeper sitting on the bench earning an absolute fortune. This day was always going to come. That's why I thought he should have probably put Dean Henderson out on loan for another season and just try and get rid of that problem. Now he's got it, you know, full in the face and he's got to deal with it.
Stevie?
Yeah, no question. De Gea's not at his best. He absolutely... I don't want to say he was cowardly, but he wasn't up for that. He wasn't up for that challenge. And he backed off and made it simpler for Calvert-Lewin. But the truth is, De Gea at one stage at Manchester United, regardless of where somebody was taking a shot from, the first thing he heard was, he's going to save this. That is absolutely not there. I know I probably shouldn't speak about Alisson after the horrendous two City goals, but the truth is, when somebody goes through on Alisson, when somebody goes through on Ederson now, you think they're going to make a save. You can't say that about De Gea. And so if you add that to the fact that he does look a little scared, then they've got a problem. And personally, I would play Henderson. Unfortunately, De Gea's on over 300 whatever grand a week, and I think that is a problem.
Meanwhile, the officials once again centre of the attention this weekend. In particular, of course, Suchet getting sent off for the apparent elbow on Mitrovic. That has since been overturned. The second time in a week that a decision made by Mike Dean has been overturned by the FA retrospectively. Don, we've talked about VAR a lot on this show, but it shows it's not VAR. It's the officials.
Yeah, do you know how many times Mike Dean looked at that decision on VAR? 21 times. So the fact that it tells me, if I'm a referee and I go over and look at the Thomas Souček elbow, if I look at that in two or three times and I think that's definite an elbow, I'm gonna send him off. That's exactly what I think. If I've got to look at something 21 times, that tells me I'm not sure. And anyone that's played the game knows Souček, his movement, what he was trying to do. Mitrovic was touched tight, he was battling with him, and Souček was trying to lift his arm over the top of Mitrovic, and he's caught him. And how Mike Dean comes to the conclusion that that's a red card and, you know, brutality, it's just not. It's just an accidental error from Thomas Souček. And then he goes to the VAR screen and look at it 21 times, and then same conclusion. Then the fact it gets overturned for the second time inside of a week, you know, his confidence must be low, but I haven't really got any sympathy for Mike Dean. He's the one that's made the calls.
Stevie?
You can't make a call unless you're sure. When it comes to penalty kicks, when it comes to sending people off the field, if you're not sure, you can't make that call. You just can't do it. And he did. And I'm with Don 100%. If you've got to look that many times, you're either looking for something or you don't know what you're looking at. And you can't do it. If you're not sure, you can't do it. And he got it wrong because it's completely accidental.
Of course, he did get it wrong, but that, of course, no excuse for the death threats that he has received. He won't be officiating for the near future. Obviously, everyone here, I'm sure, joins to deplore those people who have gone out and done that just for making a mistake at your work. West Ham, of course, in action against Manchester United in the FA Cup. We asked you boys for predictions. No surprise, the former Hammers, both of them going for a win. Don Acheson and Shaka Hislop. Meanwhile, Stevie Nicol, even with his Liverpool tinted glasses on, is going for a Manchester United victory. And we'll, of course, be looking back at that game on the next edition of the show. And that, of course, a number of FA Cup matches that you can catch on ESPN Plus over the next few days. That tie at Old Trafford, coverage starts at 2:30.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Action in La Liga on Monday. Atletico Madrid could only manage a 2-2 draw at home against Celta Vigo. A late equaliser for Celta, meaning that Atleti 8 points clear then at the top of the table, still with another game in hand over Barca and Real Madrid. That's a welcome
Ali Moreno to the show. Ali, I tweeted yesterday it was all over in Spain. Will Atleti make a fool of me?
No, you do a good enough job of that yourself, Dan. No, I don't think you made a fool of yourself. I think this is still a long way for Barcelona and Real Madrid to climb back into this race. However, Atletico Madrid would be disappointed with the way that the game went today. And I think there are a couple of things that will jump out to Diego Simeone, and that is the goals that Celta de Vigo score are very unlike Atletico Madrid to give away. Runs in behind, crosses into the box, and then open finishes 3 yards out. That's not what you would expect from Atletico Madrid team. Diego Simeone made changes at halftime, made an adjustment in terms of the formation because his team was getting exposed in those spaces. Nolito and Iago Aspas were creating problems, and it seemed to work. Luis Suarez scores goals, and I suppose that we should be used to this by now with Atletico Madrid. We should not be surprised. The guy continues to be amazing for Atletico Madrid. And you thought, okay, that's it, 2-1. Yet another game in which Atletico Madrid are going to win. And yet they give up a late equalizer. And that's not something Atletico Madrid does very often. But if you go back in the last three games that they have played in La Liga, they gave up goals to Eibar, they gave up goals to Valencia, they gave up 2 goals to Cadiz. This is something that's becoming a little bit of a pattern for Atletico Madrid. They give up goals. They've done enough in those games to come back. Not so today. Just not good enough defending in the end for Atletico Madrid.
If I asked you at the start of the season, Ali, how many goals Luis Suarez would get, I reckon maybe 15. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, maybe 15 is where you're at. I don't mean to put words in your mouth. However, he's already at 16 this campaign, which I think has exceeded everyone's expectations, hasn't it?
And some reports suggest that it triggers actually a bonus in his contract and a pay raise, if you will, as Luis Suarez, of course, needed a pay raise. The truth of the matter is, you look at Luis Suarez and he is so critical to the success of Atletico Madrid, and that's an understatement. When you consider where the goals are going to come from and how this team is playing, today in particular, where they were hit with some COVID situation and Joao Felix was not available and Yannick Ferreira Carrasco just coming back from COVID and Thomas Lemar not available either. And so you see some limitations in the attack, but the 2 goals he scores today are so Luis Suarez. They're sort of the image that you have of him as a player and poaching goals inside the 18-yard box and his movement that is not as good as it once was. He's not as quick as it once was, but he can read the game so well and puts himself in positions where he's going to finish and continues down this path that we continue to update game after game after game. 22 shots on goal, 16 goals scored. That is just a ridiculous rate. Even at his best, Luis Suarez was not having this sort of effectiveness and efficiency. When he was scoring goals for Barcelona, when he was scoring goals for Liverpool, it wasn't at this rate. He's just become so efficient and so effective in front of goal, and they need that because every goal that he scores becomes an important goal for Atletico Madrid because there aren't goals coming on from anybody else, and so therefore, his goals are not only important to him, but they're critical to the success of the team.
Here's the issue with that. 34 years of age is Luis Suarez, and Atleti's schedules are going to get ramped up, isn't it? Knocked out the Copa del Rey early, good. Forget about that, have a little bit of a rest between games. But then it's Chelsea in the Champions League, and that focus will just continue to intensify on Atleti. And of course, with Luis Suarez, Simeone's going to have to be clever, isn't he?
Yes, he is. And how do you rotate?
Yeah.
What exactly do you do? Do you rotate around Luis Suarez? Do you shorten his minutes? But if you're a goal scorer and you're on the sort of run that he's on, the last thing you want to do is sit down and watch somebody else play. You want to keep it going. You want to keep the momentum. And yet that's a decision that Simeone is going to have to see and figure out. That's why losing points today is so important for Atletico Madrid. Because if you had a 10-point lead and you felt more comfortable about what your position is in front of Barcelona and Real Madrid, then, yeah, you know what? You give a day off to Luis Suarez. Even if he doesn't want to, you just tell him, Luis, today is not the day for you, buddy. You're just going to sit there and enjoy. Now, well, you know, it just unsettles the decision-making process a little bit. You're not nearly as comfortable as you once were. And even though it's just 2 points, and I still think it's too much of a distance for Barcelona and Real Madrid to make up, you still sit back if you're Diego Simeone and you say, you know what? I don't trust anybody else here to score a goal. And so therefore, he's going to stay out there until we secure this title, until we put ourselves in a position where we really feel comfortable. And of course, I look at Atletico Madrid. Of course, they have the inside track. Of course, they are the favorites. Of course, they should win this. But today may just put things into doubt.
Nice one, Ali. As always, thank you very much, Atleti. Then, top of La Liga table, Real Madrid are looking to close that gap. They're in action against Getafe on Tuesday. The bookies have Zinedine Zidane's side as 2-1 on favourites.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
2 goals from Robert Lewandowski saw Bayern Munich beat Al Ahly by 2-0 to book a place in this year's Club World Cup final. It will take place on Thursday against Tigres. Casey Keller and Steve Cherundolo with us. Steve is a man who resides in Germany. Does anyone care about this?
Yes, absolutely. I'm sure people were watching tonight, as I did as well. It was at 7 p.m., so it was easy and it was accessible for everyone. It's important for Bayern Munich to kind of raise that German flag on the international scene as well, and everybody was looking forward to Bayern finishing out a perfect season. This is the last title that they would need to finish that. So, yes, they're interested. I think the performance was okay. It was what they needed. Nothing more, nothing less. And everybody's looking forward to the final.
CONCACAF are interested, aren't they? Tigres, of course, representing them in the final on Thursday. Casey, look at the excitement on your face.
Now, look, it's great. I mean, obviously, we would have loved to have seen LAFC if they had beaten Tigres to get to the Club World. But in the end, give Tigres some credit. You know, they've been consistently very good in CONCACAF, and now having an opportunity to represent the region in the final against powerhouse Bayern, it's great all around.
How much of a contest can they make of this, Casey?
No, I think they'll be okay. I mean, you got to the final because you've been consistently good. I mean, look at, you know, Bayern didn't roll over in their group, so it wasn't a case where Bayern are necessarily just crushing everybody. So, no, I think Tigres can account well for CONCACAF. Do I think Bayern are the favorites? Yes, of course, no question about it. But I think Tigres will give them a good game and maybe even surprise them a little bit.
Meanwhile, let's focus on what happened in the Bundesliga this week. And once again, Borussia Dortmund's failings. The big story, Steve, of course, you called this game for ESPN+. And it just strikes me, time and time again, a team with such quality doing so badly. Why?
Well, they're not functioning as a team. They're operating in three different sections. There's the offense, the midfield, and the defense. Sorry, not to forget the keeper, Case. And it's just not good enough to compete in the Bundesliga anymore, especially against teams, very solid groups like Freiburg and other teams around Germany. So they really need to come together as a group, and that is really the key for them moving forward, is to make a team out of a group of individuals. And that's somebody, obviously one of the responsibilities of the coach, and that's certainly something I know the club will be looking at when they do hire a new coach for the following season.
With hindsight, Casey, was it a mistake then to sack Favre?
I think at the time it wasn't. I think it was a case where they felt that maybe this could give him that little bit of a boost, that Terzic was such a popular figure that maybe it would just bump him into the form that they needed to challenge Bayern, even though I think they really felt that that was maybe beyond them this season. But I think a lot of what had happened is they were papering over a bunch of cracks because they were so effective offensively. And, you know, Steve mentioned in the broadcast the how, you know, disjointed from the back line to the midfield were, and the big gaps that that Freiburg were finding, you know, right in front of the center backs, and eventually a good strike and a goalkeeping error were their undoing from those regions. So, yes, they're not functioning right. Maybe Favre could have done the job, but obviously they weren't convinced or they wouldn't have fired him.
Are you surprised that Terzic has come in and not been able to improve this side, Steve?
Well, Lucien Favre was a tactician, and he's a master of tactical work and video work, and he knows everything about the game and watches trainings over and over again in the games. He makes no mistakes on this side. But what was lacking him and what they were not happy with was his emotional side of managing the group, the emotions in the group, in the locker room, and at halftime and before the game and after the game. And this is something they were really hoping on with Edin Terzic, because he was the emotional leader out of the coaching staff, really trying to motivate the boys, you know, whether it was a pep talk or a tactical meeting in a hotel. And they're really hoping for this to put them to the next level. And it just hasn't. It seems like either they're not accepting him as being their coach or an authoritative person, because with emotion, raw emotion alone, you're not going to be able to guide a team like this. There are so many different characters from A to Z in this group, and it's very hard to manage. So it's going to take an experienced coach and person to manage this group moving forward.
Steve, you talk about characters, but this is a team that's defined by youngsters and up-and-coming quality. So in theory, you'd imagine, is that not easier to coach?
Well, if you really take a look at the group, there is a lot of very talented young players with a huge upside, and that is the business model of Borussia Dortmund. But there's Emre Can, there's Mats Hummels, there's an Axel Witsel. There's plenty of experience and age in this roster, and that's something I think they did a good job of watching. But it also makes it very difficult for the coach to manage all of that. You have really the whole spectrum at this club, and it makes it very difficult to manage.
Finally, Steve, how much of a disaster would it be for Dortmund if they didn't qualify for the Champions League?
Well, it would certainly put them in a hole, not only with their fans and the whole Dortmund family, but I think financially as well. This is something they're very depended on over the past 4 years. And now, unfortunately, through the COVID situation, revenue sales has broken away as well, which was something that Borussia Dortmund could always count on week in and week out, 80,000 fans there. And so it could put them in a serious hole, especially when they're talking about revamping their roster and adding new threats moving forward, or filling in holes, better said.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. In Germany, it is all about the German Cup this week. Games that you can see live on ESPN3. Borussia Mönchengladbach take on Borussia Dortmund. It's Leipzig against Wolfsburg. Rot-Weiß Essen takes on Holstein Kiel. And Regensburg take on Werder Bremen.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at eBayMotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to Steve, to Casey, and to Ali as well. Stay tuned. It is quite the mammoth extra time that is next. Don and Stevie answering your tweets. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Stevie Nicol and a very tired Don Hutchison is with us. Don, you're up till 4 a.m. watching the Super Bowl.
Mate, I stayed awake for the whole lot by about 4:30, just as the trophy was being handed over. I was going.
Wow.
Loved it, though.
I was in bed earlier than you.
Brady to Gronk.
Stevie, you're good friends with Tom Brady from your Revs days, so you were happy?
Oh, yeah. Did you not see him make a sign to me after the one of the touchdowns? Give me one of them.
What?
Only Ascot.
How is that? You got to do the heart, Stevie. Do the heart, not the cross.
What does that even mean?
I was all you come up with at the moment.
Stay away. Oh, man. Now that Thomas Tuchel has taken over as manager of Chelsea, do they have any chance of beating Atletico Madrid? What do you think, Stevie? You haven't been too impressed so far. You're not one of these people jumping on the Tuchel bandwagon, Stevie.
Well, I wish somebody would tell me what I'm supposed to be impressed about. You know, they've got results, and at the end of the day, that's what you're there for, get results. But I don't see anything at all. I don't see any improvement under Tuchel than what Frank was doing.
But defence is better.
Well, that's what I said. I mean, but Thomas Tuchel's this incredible coach. So where's this incredible football?
He's only been there two weeks. Give him a chance.
It takes time. Okay, it takes time. Yeah. All right. Well, don't ask me about the changes he's made then. Wait, whatever time you need. Do you need 5, 6 weeks, 7 weeks? Let me know.
Okay. And then come this and ask. Sounds like Jurgen Klopp. Quickly ban that question, won't it?
Seriously?
Have we got the questions?
Oh, this Chelsea side is way better under Tuchel. He's only been there two minutes.
Don, in response to the question, do they have a better chance now of beating Atleti? Obviously they do, because they got a proper manager in charge.
Do you know what, mate? Yeah.
So it was the way you asked the question, it was a problem.
I've got to say they probably do, because they look a little bit more confident. I don't think there's much change. They're trying to get momentum. What was it, 3 wins and a draw? I still think Atletico Madrid going through. I think they're far too good for Chelsea. But listen, he's been there, a couple of weeks, and he's unbeaten in 4 with a few clean sheets.
For Don, where do you think your pal Frank Lampard should end up next in his managerial career? A Premier side challenging for the top 6 or an overseas adventure? Well, you'd like to cover him overseas, Don?
No, I'm a Newcastle fan. I'd like to see him at Newcastle, but Mike Ashley's not going to have Frank Lampard or Stevie G.
Why would you want him at Newcastle?
What?
Why?
Why? Because he's a good manager and he's better than probably what we've got. Simple. Football would be better. Results might be better. Change of culture might be better. Might see Newcastle play some good football. Everything's just been a bit stale. Everything's a bit drifty. We're just drifting and we'll finish 6th bottom, 7th bottom.
What are you basing this on?
Huh?
What are you basing it on?
Well, I'm basing it on him and Jody Morris having a different thought process than the old school managers who have been around for a long time.
But that didn't, it didn't work at Chelsea. And you've got a better budget, you're having better players. He wasn't playing that sort of football.
You can't just say, well, Frank's not going to be a great manager just because he had a bigger budget at Chelsea. You've got to give the guy time to then go to maybe Crystal Palace or Newcastle, or what Stevie G's done at Rangers with hardly any budget, and win the league and being unbeaten in 28 and playing good football. Gotta give these guys a chance to show us something different.
Stevie?
Yeah, that could be a, you know, Crystal Palace. You know, I think as far as.
But he hasn't done anything. Why is he suddenly getting another Premier League job? He had a Premier League job and he failed.
Well, you can't just say he's never gonna get another Premier League job.
Hold on. Dan, that's not what you were saying when they went 17 games undefeated at Chelsea. And they played some good, really good football. and the defending was really good. They had a bad run, yes, and unfortunately, because it's at Chelsea, then you lose your job. That doesn't happen at most clubs. So on the whole, I think Frank did a good job. I thought they played some good football, but they had a horrible run. I mean, would you get rid of Klopp? If Abramovich was the manager of Liverpool, would he get rid of Klopp because of the run they're on and how bad they are? Well, forget how great they've been. They're on a horrible run. Get rid. All of a sudden, that means Frank can't go to Crystal Palace.
I just think that because
Chelsea sat at the top of the Premier League. At one time, Chelsea was sat at the top of the Premier League.
No, they were. And Frank was coming out and saying, we're not title contenders, calm down. We shouldn't be looking at winning the title. When you kind of think, well, you should, because they spent all this money and you've got to be competing. And therefore, because he's Frank Lampard and he thinks he's everybody's mate, all of a sudden he can come in and take another Premier League side.
I've never met Frank Lampard.
I've never met him. I just pretend I know him.
Yeah. He wishes he never met you, Don. Bloody WhatsApp again.
Don tried to meet him, but he blanked him.
Just ghosted him.
He's got to be given another chance, though, isn't he? It's like if Stevie G comes down from Rangers. If Stevie G comes down from Rangers and comes to the Premier League, let's just say Stevie G goes in it, I don't know, Newcastle. Let's just say he does okay, but he doesn't pull up any trees. Because he's not got loads of money to spend and he can't compete with the top six. And then in 2 years' time, Newcastle sacks Stevie G. He's still got to get another chance of getting a job. You can't just say, you've been sacked from Chelsea, you'll never work again.
If he does get hired at Newcastle, you can't keep calling him Stevie G or Craig is going to kill you.
I know, but I've got Stevie G's Instagram account. I text him every now and again on Instagram, so he could be my new mate.
He could be your new mate in the DF. But Gerrard would have won something up at Scotland and done well. No,
I know. I'm just saying, what I like, Dan, is I like these new managers who have got new ideas, and I like fresh young managers.
You like English managers that are your mates?
No, they're not my mates. I've been in the game a long time, and I promise you this, I mean no disrespect whatsoever to people like Tony Pulis, brilliant guy, been a stand-up manager for 20 odd years, same as Steve Bruce, same as Alan Pardew, same as Big Sam. I like all these guys. But I love the fact that we could probably have a Frank Lampard, a Stevie G, someone a little bit different. Thomas Tuchel's come in who's going to be different.
You can't use Thomas Tuchel in the same context as Frank Lampard and Steven Gerrard.
No, he's different. He'll be good because he's different. I just don't want everyone playing boring, negative football. I like someone that's going to do something completely different.
Where are we going now? Stevie! Were you typical?
Did you ever see Thomas Tuchel? Did you ever see Mainz when Thomas Tuchel was the manager?
Yeah, they were great.
Very good.
Good run in the cup.
You wouldn't know that team on Mainz, Tommy Tuchel, when he was there from a hole in that wall over in my.
So what point are you making here, Stephen?
Well, the point I'm making is you're giving it all this. Oh, how can you see Tommy Tuchel and judge him with this guy? Well, Tommy Tuchel went to Dortmund, right? Inherited a great team, right? And the first year they were second, and the second year they were third, and he got the sack. And then he went to PSG, and he did. What did he do at PSG? I wish somebody would tell me what he did at PSG.
Right.
Seriously.
Okay.
Because we did was complain about how, depending on whether Neymar and Mbappe turned up, and if they didn't, they would lose. That's great coaching, that, isn't it?
So he didn't inherit a great team at Dortmund, did he? They were fighting relegation when he took over. He then propelled them up the table, and then he obviously went...
What are you talking about?
That's what I'm talking about.
Did you go look at the squad? And the reason I said that is I went and looked at the squad that he inherited.
Right. So how were they doing? How were they doing before he took over?
They were
struggling. That's why he was brought in.
He inherited McTerian and all these guys and your Hummels and Piszczeks and the goalkeeper.
I mean, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But did he improve?
Why do you call him Tommy Tuchel?
Did they improve it? He improved the side though going in, didn't he, Stevie? That's you can acknowledge that.
Well, so they finished second and then the following year they finished third. How's that improving them?
Right, well how about but the season when Klopp left, he took over and they were terrible.
Well, they got worse.
How can you get worse when you put them up the table?
Because they were second. They were second in the first year, and then the second year, they were third.
Right.
How did they get worse?
Because when he took over, they were struggling.
If you're in third, you're worse than second.
When he took over, they were struggling, and he got them up to second.
He took over an absolute dynamite team that had a struggle in the second part of the season. But as far as the jerseys, the names in the back of the jerseys, this was a proper team that wasn't doing well.
Okay. As you could say, is Chelsea a proper team?
So they weren't going to do any worse. They weren't going to do any worse.
They weren't going to do any worse.
Excuse me.
That's how low it was. Right.
They weren't going to do any worse than they were.
Okay. Away from the Lampard loving. Stevie, were you typically good with the media as a manager, or did you tend to make excuses like Klopp?
I thought I was pretty straight, to be honest.
Did you ever apologise to it? Did you ever snap?
Must have done.
I wouldn't say snap, but there was a couple of times I made comments that probably shouldn't have done, but that's not bad in 10 years.
Yeah, that's not bad, Stevie.
Yeah. No, because you can't. And it's very difficult. I tell you, the worst thing is, after a defeat, and you've got somebody... So let's put it this way. Somebody asking you a question who you know doesn't know anything about football.
Right.
And they try and make out as if they know what they're talking about, and you have to be nice to them. That's not easy, I can assure you. But I think I was fair. A couple of times I snapped, but that was it.
Did you ever get fined for anything you said?
Yeah, a couple of times.
Now you haven't got
with referees.
Oh, just referees.
Yeah. Things with referees. Not with being disrespectful to journalists, I didn't know.
Don, what were you like post-match?
Well, I was all right, because I wasn't a manager.
Right.
So I was selfish.
Players can just look after themselves here.
Yeah, well, that's what we do. We're selfish. That's what type of beings we are. Managers, as Stevie said, they've got to take the brunt for it. And when the players let them down, everyone thinks it's the manager's fault.
Do you know what's funny? You know players, you know what they do? Typically what they'll do is, after you've spoken to them after the game, they'll kind of churn out what you said to them. So you can, again, if you want to get a message over,
right,
when you've gone in after the game and you have a little word with them, whatever it may be about, you can plant little seeds. And then on the papers on the Monday morning, you read the newspapers and they'll go, yeah, so-and-so said this, and they'll be like... Yeah, what?
Oh.
So they just spout out what you say. It makes it easier for them. They don't have to think. Generally, they're better off when they don't think. So you just you can manipulate it that way. But as a rule, they generally spout out what you say.
For Don, who's impressed you the most for City in the absence of Aguero and Kevin De Bruyne?
Kevin De Bruyne. Gundogan, I think, Dan. Another player that was at Dortmund under Tommy Tuchel. I just think he's an amazing player. I think he's got a great football brain where he can play as a six. He's played as a false nine. He's scoring goals since David Silva's moved on. I think he's took the mantle where he's playing a lot further forward. Always been a good technician when he's on the ball. And when City play well, I always think he has a good game. He's a player that I love watching. I think he makes the game very easy.
Stevie, were you ever particularly antagonised by another team's goal celebration?
No.
I can't imagine you were paying much attention. What about as a coach?
No,
about,
I was either too busy.
What about as a coach? Like, did another coach, the way they acted, did that not get up your nose?
Aye, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, the good thing is in MLS, when I was there, the benches were quite a distance apart, which was good. I could not survive. You know, when you look at games today and you see two coaches standing, 10 yards away from each other, 10 foot? I'm sorry, I wouldn't be able to cope with that. I would be falling out all the time. Couldn't cope with it.
Don?
No, I'd be too immature. If my team's winning, I'd be doing all sorts to provoke the other manager, and if they're provoking me, I'd be terrible. I'd rise to the bait. I'd snap too easy. It's not for me. Standing in a technical area, getting goaded by opposite managers and coaches and the stuff that goes on, I'd be in trouble, I think, every week.
What about the opposition side, Dom, when you were playing? Did you pay any attention to that goal?
That's all right. Yeah. No, that's all right, because you can just two-foot them. You can just, right. You know, I played against Vinnie Jones and, you know, John Fashanu, and, you know, we all played against them boys, and you just got stuck in, you matched them at their own, I was going to say ability, but sometimes thuggery. And then you hopefully, you know, the better side wins overall. But when you're on the pitch, Dan, you just take care of yourself. I played against Vieira and Stevie G and Roy Keane. And
Stevie G, you know, pick.
Some real hard cases. Terry Hurlock, you know, some mad characters where you just got to look after yourself. I've done some rascal tackles that, you know, I think I put one on social media a couple of days ago when I two-footed an Arsenal player. It's probably a four-month ban these days, but that was the era that we lived in.
We were angry off the pitch as well, Dom.
No, never on the pitch. I was a different character on the pitch, Dan. I could go through a game being, if I was playing well and everything was going my way, I could look quite silky and look, I wouldn't say elegant, but you know, I was quite all right. I could handle myself, I could handle the ball. But if I was playing in the Liverpool team yesterday that got spanked against Man City, let me tell you, I probably don't last that game. I think the red mist comes at about 85 minutes. I end up topping someone and probably get a red card.
Wow. Selfish. Stevie?
You know the coaching one you were asking?
Yeah.
There's some coaches, right, who sit in the backside and don't move, right? And then when the teams go ahead, the team scores against you and they go ahead, all of a sudden they're on the touchline and they're giving it this and pointing and they're shouting, going, John, you know, giving it all that. And it, I tell you what, there was a couple of guys did it to me. I was absolutely fuming. Just because it's the old show, because the owner sat up in the box and you're standing on the touchline and you're ahead and he's pointing all directions and telling everybody what to do.
Stevie, did you play the commentary game away when Graeme Souness delivered his team talk about Mickey Quinn and Robert Rosario, who were the commentary's two front men? And I think it might be Torben Picnic. I don't know if Stevie played or Mark Wright. And he said these two centre forwards are the worst two centre forwards in the league. If they get a chance against us, I'm going to hammer yous after the game. I think Mickey Quinn scored three and Rosario scored one, right? Jeremy Redknapp got sent off, right? And I was on the bench, and Gordon Strachan was managing commentary, and Graeme Souness said to me, get on, I want you to two-foot someone right in front of the dugout, because I'm going to chin Gordon Strachan.
Wow!
Because Graeme Souness's head just absolutely fell off, because Coventry were battering us, and obviously Gordon Strachan was giving it this, that, and the other, and Souness went, get on there now and two-foot someone and start a brawl.
Wow. And did you, Dom?
Do you know...
Second?
Did you?
Somebody sent me a picture.
Yeah, went straight on, smashed someone.
Wow. Go on, Bennett.
Did you play that, Stevie?
That's amazing. Somebody sent me a picture during the week of me taking Jamie Redknapp along the touchline because he'd just been sent off. I bet that was the game.
Yeah, that's it, Coventry.
He got sent off, and so I went in the squad. I wasn't dressed, and so when that he got it. Sent off, the gaffer said to me, "Hey, take him in." So I took him into the dressing room.
That was it.
I bet Coventry, that was the same game, Highfield Road.
Yeah.
Stevie, what happens when you take someone in the dressing room in that? Because we do see like assistant coaches going with the person who gets sent off. Do you just kind of sit there? What do you do?
Well, it depends on them. Listen, I was trying to be... I was a little bit longer in the tooth by then, so obviously I was trying to, you know, on the way off, I'm going, OK, don't worry about it, things happen, you know.
Yeah.
Don't do it again, blah, blah, blah. But I would assume it depends on the person, because if they're going mental, then you've got to try and calm them down and get them back to their senses.
Final.
But Jamie was calm. He was pretty calm. Didn't say a lot.
Final point.
So we just leave him.
Don, every time I turn the TV on, you seem to be commentating a game. Other than parking, what are the benefits of commentating in an empty stadium?
Benefits is actually quite good, because you can hear what the players are saying to each other and the communication, and you find out actually who are the leaders on the pitch. We were talking about David De Gea before. He is one of the quietest. So he doesn't really command his box. He doesn't give too much information to his centre-halves. So he is really quiet. But other games, you can hear, you know, people like Cahill, one of the commentators on Palace games, you can really hear who's leading and who's telling who. Jordan Henderson's another one. He's a real shouter. So you get an idea on, you know, which players can lead and which ones are quiet and which ones just get on, you know, left to their own devices. So you get a better handle on the individuals.
And they can hear you better as well, Don. So you can be like, Jody, cooey, cooey, oh, I'll
tell
here.
You what, I'll tell you what, Dan. I'll tell you what, I commentated on Brentford versus Leicester in the FA Cup a couple of weeks ago, and all the Leicester subs were sitting one row ahead of myself when I was doing commentary. It was awful.
Why? Because you don't want to say anything bad in front of them?
Yeah.
Because Craig would relish it. He would slag everybody off just to antagonise them.
Yeah, no, but
he quote his way.
Because Brentford took the lead, and I think they accused Mendy, who was playing in the game, of switching off.
Right.
And as I said, when Mendy switched off there, he's played him on side. About four subs just in front of me just turned around and gave it one of them. I was like,
oh dear, Don.
But then you've got to call it how you see it. You know.
Of course. Of course you do. That is it. That is the end of what a mammoth extra time that has been. Thank you very much. We're all off now to watch Mines under Tommy Tuchel and see what we've learned.
Mines!
Don't talk to Ben.
I'm going on to YouTube.
We've got to look up that commentary game. That's it. Thank you very much. ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. Until then, goodbye.